This VASEX podcast with Dr. Chris Landon was produced in the studios of Ventura Adult and Continuing Education as part of the Digital Multimedia and Studio Program. For more information, go to adultedventura.edu.
I'm Dr. Chris Landon, and I serve as your host. Here in Ventura County, we're really trying to let the world know about everything that we do here and our capabilities. That's going to require some things coming from the university, some things coming from the entertainment industry, and coming here to Ventura County to take advantage of everything that we have here in terms of innovation and innovators, business, and so forth. So we're going to hear today from Chris Collins. So, Chris, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Whereabouts did you come down from?
I came to Ventura County because of a relationship meeting you. And, you know, I found you to be an incredible leader for the county itself and an incredible cheerleader. And I mean that in a very, very respectful way. And I didn't really truly understand Ventura County's benefits until after spending time with you and learning a lot of the people that I've met in the area. And it really is a great area. I'm very excited about it. I live outside Sacramento in Fair Oaks, which is a county city. And in my life, I've lived a lot of places, but I've always come back to California. And I have a great love for California because of the diversity, both from where I'm at, Northern California in the Valley, at the base of the Sierras, to here, Southern California, where here's Ventura County, this gem, which is 20 minutes this way to Santa Barbara, 20 minutes this way with no cars on the road to LA, and it's beautiful. It's its own gem. So I'm really happy to be here today.
And we started with AJ Rippon from Florida.
Yes, we did.
Who heard me in the same kind of way and said, right. This is, I think we can put some people together. So
yeah.
I'm a connector, and you're a connector too. So yeah. we've started on trying to find out where we have mutual interests.
Absolutely.
And of course, I'm very Ventura-centric, and you're kind of more world-centric than anything. So let's start with kind of where we started with AJ, which is on the film scene.
Yes.
Let's work a little further back.
Okay.
You were in radio.
I was.
I can tell from your voice there.
Thank you.
And kind of where we started, as we started a conversation, is what I want to do with our Radio Indigena here.
Yep.
That podcasting, that having that individual person in the neighborhood who's keeping track of things, yeah. Even if they're not very good at what they do,
right.
Then at least it's a start. And we just went through our fires. I would have loved to know what was going two blocks over in Ojai and what's happening in Camarillo to my friends' neighborhoods and so forth. And so we're starting to work on how to educate people to be better podcasters.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what's happened to the radio industry? I mean, why don't I have that local news anymore?
Well, it's a real problem because, as you said, during the terrible fires that happened that had people riveted all over the country and, of course, praying morning, noon, and night for everybody here, from obviously the residents to the firefighters and the amazing stories we saw, to the floods then that came after, which obviously is a part of a human disaster because nothing can stop the water that decides to flood down the roads. What's happened is there was a missing quality that could draw together the real story. That's been lost because corporations, in a large sense, took over and tried to corner the radio market. So you had, you know, there were three or four that were pretty big. Now there are two that are big, and there are actually three still in the game, but two of the three are bankrupt. And basically, it's a Wall Street play now, where Wall Street now is deciding, you know, what they have to do, how they have to operate, you know, with their cap and what that includes and what it doesn't include. And when you have a natural disaster like this, if you're not ready and you don't practice those qualities of what the medium is about, the medium was about licensing frequencies, and those frequencies serve the community that they're in. And it's nothing more important than when you have big fires that won't go out, that are being fueled by hot flames, or torrential rain that comes all within 4 days, and you don't have the shrubbery and the trees to back it up. That's when the medium of radio used to be, I think, the most of the immediacy needs. It was even more so than TV, because we could get there, we could talk, and create these things, meaning these things of information. And you know, the interesting thing, you brought up podcasting. You know, if podcasting were in place, people could have used the podcasting networks more efficiently to post updates, so people could then use the podcasting frequencies, and the links and so forth all over to find out. This is update, hour number 12, 13, 14, 15. And clearly, as I've told you, and maybe we tell the audience, one of my real ideas is that it's not a lot of money and not a lot of wherewithal, and really it's political capital for a lot of the politicians, both in Sacramento and at the federal level, where you could create low-power frequencies for each city in Ventura County, Santa Barbara County, and then during these kinds of disasters, link them together so that you have ongoing foot-to-foot, space-to-space updating so people can go to their low-power frequencies, which don't come off the side of a mountain. They're usually in the middle of a city up on top of a building, and get that kind of information. And it would have made a world of difference, both locally, obviously the most important area, regionally, which is very important because you need to get people into support, statewide because you need the money and the commitment to get here, but then, nationally and internationally, so that rumors and, the spreading of misinformation that would have ceased to exist because you would have had all these different licenses that would have been able to tell the real story from people that were in the middle of the whole event.
Well, and the other thing that we're working on with the Mixteco project, of course, is it's got to be in your native language.
Absolutely.
And so we're at 50% Spanish speaking here in Ventura County. Yep. And then we have the Mixteco, we've got the Zapotec, we've got all the sub languages and all those things. Those people are working in the fields. And, and as I would drive by with my box of 500 masks and pass them out, they're working smoke and everything else and taking their lungs without being educated, without people reaching out. So we were able to push that through, but that communication that interview, the entrevista, for our Spanish-speaking listeners is important as well. Plus, that's that boombox radio that's sitting in sitting in the field. So
that's absolutely right. And I mean, this is the most important. They're the front line. They're the first line. So when the smoke comes in, I mean, folks are out doing whatever they do, but primarily people talk about the fact that crops are out there. Well, I mean, this is your line of defense there. I mean, you've got people out that are facing toxic chemicals, toxic air. Second of all, air isn't good when it's toxic and or, dirty air, as they like to say. For anybody in that situation, they're the first line of defense that we would want to get to. People that don't have the access 24/7, maybe not the phones that ring inside of a headphone in your ear to warn you like that. So, and that really is important. That's why you need the native languages. We've talked about this. You know, if they speak one certain form dialect of Latin, they're sure to know maybe the main form of Latin, which would be Spanish. They're going to know words like alto, things like this, to stop, to sense, to look. So absolutely. And this is what radio used to do. This is what it did for 75 years. It entertained. It did this. It had the immediacy. But then, of course, digital technology took over. But radio sort of fought that. And that's another reason why they fell behind, because they haven't embraced the technology and married it together and decided to share. And I'll give you an example of that. Many years ago, I did a very, very profitable deal with YouTube concerning Brazilian soccer, because in my work, since I've left the media industry per se, I've been involved in distribution of soccer and other content. And YouTube, when I got their back end and they took me through and showed me all the ways that they disseminate information and the people that they reach, I immediately, first thing I said to them, I goes, no wonder radio's in a bankruptcy stage. And this was 6 years ago. I said, they have no hope. There's absolutely no way when a company is making $4 billion a quarter by giving away free bandwidth so people can take their cameras or whatever and shoot you and I talking in this studio and post it up and then put ads in front of it and behind it and eyeballs are watching, that they could ever compete with it, because they gave away the immediacy of play that people like YouTube have done and or the big news networks, the industry of news that now obviously is lit up at this stage of digital media, right, where you can link off the digital media and grab video and things like that. So it's a shame, but it starts here. It starts now. It starts in communities, Ventura County, parts of Santa Barbara County. You know, the low power stations, they're usually, what, 10 watts? You pay 10 grand to the FCC, and then you have a community station. And, you may not use that or need that community station always, but I'll tell you what, when the flames, the Santa Anas, are burning out of control, and you see mountains that you move here for to basically, you know, worship and engage and thank every day to have the beauty, they're in flames, and you're being encircled. You'd like to have that information to know what road to go to and what road not to go to, or to go help your friends or in family or animals or, you know, anything important, you know, keepsakes. You know, you want to know what to do and to try to help. And it wasn't available during that. And that's a shame.
Well, that's part of the commitment from the Ventura Adult Continuing Education.
Correct.
Is we're looking at putting together an enhancement to this digital media that we do here. The people behind the cameras are going to school here, who put my lab on, going to school here, and they'll leave here with good skills. And I have people who live in the harbor, and they'd love to do a morning report of the surf and the tide.
Absolutely.
And what's happening at the yacht club and so forth. But let's move on a little bit to on the film scene, which is kind of was our first interaction there.
Yeah.
So tell me about on the film scene, and you've took it through a certain business cycle there.
Yeah, it's an interesting play. On the film scene, I was doing a website for who turned out to be the former publicist for the Beatles. And I didn't know that when somebody asked me to come down and meet with a gentleman. They said was in at one time the movie industry and had dealt with celebrities and what have you. And I said, hey, I'm in L.A. all the time. This was at the start of the century, 2000, 2001. I ran a company called DigiCast, which was the first company in the world that did 24/7 streaming of mostly sporting events, some entertainment events, and we were a platinum level provider of video for Microsoft, for Windows Media specifically, which was the video distribution site in the world. It used to do 2.5-3 billion views of video per year. So anyway, I came to LA with some of my other meetings, sizing up things, and I met this gentleman. And he said, I'd like you to build me a site, and it needs to do this, this, and that. And I said, well, we can do that. So I said, he said, I have something special for you. And I was waiting. I go, okay, what do you have special for me? And I notice all around his walls are original 8x10s of the movie Hard Day's Night and from Help. And I see him in pictures with John, Paul, George, and Ringo. And I said, well, look it, why don't you give me all these pictures here and I'll gladly do your website. And he said, no, that's not what I'm going to give you. And he opened up a closet and there was two huge boxes and they were filled with tapes. And he said, this is a show called On the Film Scene. It originated, ran only once, each show on the Z Channel, which the Z Channel was the corresponding competitor, if you will, to HBO. The studios wanted to have a channel on the West Coast because HBO was created with the East Coast media properties in mind to try to then condense all of their content and sell to cable providers the channel throughout the South and the East. So the Z Channel was a really cool channel. There are many people that are in the TV industry today, movie industry, that grew up with the Z Channel. On the Film Scene was its prime show. And basically, it was sit-down, one-on-one interviews, like you and I are doing right now, between some of the legendary directors, like Sir David Lean or Billy Barty, you know, as a character, or, you know, a young Meryl Streep, or, you know, think of the actor or actress. They sat one-on-one with the late Charles Chaplin, not the actor, but the outstanding movie critic from the Los Angeles Times, who I think is obviously the greatest movie critic ever. He was brilliant. He studied, he knew who his characters were, he understood why movies were made, how they were made, and how that, you know, how that played out and how movies are released and what people should look for in the movies and so forth. So it was A-plus all the way around. And to be honest with you, I was blown away when I got this catalog and I said, this is a catalog like a fine bottle of wine. It's not for now, but it's for the ages. And we made the deal, signed the papers, I shook his hand and I said, I promise you that anything we do business-wise is going to include 50-50 the education of the students of today, the education of the students, you know, before and after and in between, because that's what this is about. It teaches you how the greats made movies. Why did Sir David Lean, you know, do the bridge, River Kwai, you know, in the middle of Burma? Okay, and why did he want the aesthetics of that exact spot? And, you know, how did they remake it and make it so, you know, alive and so forth. So, you know, for somebody in the 60s, as we remember, that saw that movie when it came out, it was bigger than life, right? Up to Spielberg talking about one-on-one with E.T., you know, and how he made the magic happen and why it happened. It's a remarkable series. I think we have, it fills out to 30 DVDs that are 2 hours long. So, I mean, it's an abundance of hours, and it's got hundreds of actresses, directors, producers, and everything from lighting, camera operation, sound, aesthetic value, acting, directing, producing. I'm very proud of it. I'm very excited. You know, my business partner, Randy Adams, and I, we built this company, DigiCast, to do and what it said it would do, and it did that. We were the first to bring video to phones in North America. The only people that were doing it were the Koreans and the Japanese. The Japanese that did it, they invested in our company in America. So we were on the cusp of a lot of great things, but there were a bunch of bizarre things that kept coming to us because technology was so new then that people that had these assets were looking for people like us. I found a box of tapes that were the Doors from the 1967 on a local TV appearance tour that they did, in the afternoon from 3 to 3:30, playing like 12 different Doors songs. Jim Morrison and, the whole group there, like they were just baby fresh kids. And I got that because of what we did. And of course, I got it back to Ray Kaczmarek, who passed away a couple of years ago, the keyboardist of the Doors. Mm-hmm. But it was finds like this that we did that enhanced our reputation. And it didn't take a lot of money to do it. It didn't take because maybe Rupert Murdoch was my uncle. It took this desire and fire to go out, approach it, find it, proof it, and then, work at it. I mean, really, that's what our industry is about, right?
Well, you've shared some new project. I've tried to hook you up with
yes,
people that I know.
Yep.
And one of them is you have some background with hockey.
I do. I was a TV color announcer analyst and radio color analyst for 6.5 seasons in the National Hockey League with the San Jose Sharks. I came back after a 10-year leave from there. I went to Seattle to start up DigiCast, met my business partner, Randy Adams, and we had a very successful business, which led me to China, which is another story, to run the Chinese National Olympic hockey team, which I ran for a number of years. But I came back to the Sharks and brought them in as a sponsor. So the second time I was with the Sharks was about four and a half years. So I did 11 seasons in the National Hockey League, and I had a background in hockey as well. I played when I was young, pretty good player, but had the broadcasting bug when I was very young and wanted to be a broadcaster. So, I stepped away from the serious high-level active sports and still did my sports, but, went more to get in to what I did. And then I married the two as I got older and got that experience and earned a reputation, and that's what I did to be in the NHL. Let me add that I got tired of broadcasting in the National Hockey League because I had already been a very successful morning a show host and a TV, co-host and so forth. I've done a lot of national shows and what have you in my career. And I stepped back because I was bored with the broadcasting end, right? Because you really don't make the decisions. You're not the guy that, in my attitude, in my life, I'd always been successful being that guy to make the decisions and go. So I told them, I want to be in scouting. I want to be able to develop players, understand the development of it, then research it and be able to tabulate and so forth. And then I'd like to work my way into a general managership and or ownership role if I'm able to put together the funding later on in life. That's why I stepped away from the NHL broadcasting, or I'd still be there now going on 20 plus years. So that's also an area we need to encourage people, is that, one thing leads to the next thing. The next thing leads to another thing. Don't be afraid. Go for it, because there's always riches around the corner. It just depends on how patient you are.
Well, we're working on with the crew from here a movie called But Something Is There, and we're almost through. And so that kind of, when you got a project around a woman in national hockey?
Yes, we do. The only woman, the first woman, I believe there was one more that has practiced with an NHL club, but the first woman to play in an NHL game was a young lady by the name of Manon Riome. She was widely known in Canada. She was one of the top women hockey players. She was a netminder, a goaltender. I call them netminders, sorry, inside business thing. And anyway, she was a really good talent. And Phil Esposito, who's a Hall of Fame player back from the 60s and 70s, brought together a group from Asia and bought the Tampa Bay Lightning and founded them and put them out. And needed something to keep the interest up in Tampa, right? Because, he was Hall of Fame player. That doesn't mean you're a Hall of Fame owner, right? We all face these crises in life. So one of his things to do was he went and they got Manon Riom. They signed her to a contract and they put her, let her practice with the team. She was on the bench for games and they finally put her into a game and she played and she was good. And she earned the respect immediately of the players in the Lightning side who had already learned that, practicing with her. But all the opposing team and, you know, guys talked about this for years after, you know, during my time in the league, after it. And it was an amazing thing, you know, and I think now society is finally waking up that, you know, we're all equals. I mean, I was raised that people are equal, right? I've never had this problem in my life. I had a strong mother who made me understand that you will treat people as you expect to be treated to yourself. You will treat your wife even better, your girlfriends, whatever it was, you know, that you're ventured in at that time. And I think it's exciting because for Manon, she's being recognized. I mean, what an amazing thing she did. And she was so unassuming about it. So, you know, because of my experience and what have you, somebody called me and said, hey, I want to send a movie person to you, and I want you to talk to them. And they laid out this story, and I knew right away. I said, hey, Manon Riom, okay? I mean, this is good. I mean, she's an amazing character. I mean, she did it. When people said, there's no room for women in the sport. Meanwhile, who wins the gold medals? The Canadian women, and recently, a few weeks ago, the American women win the gold medal, right? Not the men of America are winning it. So, I mean, look it. There's a real place in this sport, and there has been for decades for women in the sport. And what a great story for Manon Riom. So one thing has led to another, and we're working to bring this story to film. And I've had fantastic conversations with many, including a really great person who's at Disney IMAX by the name of Jason Brennick, who has really helped both myself and you in discussions we've had take the path to make this real. And the writer and supporting people in the film are very excited, and we're making great progress. So don't be surprised if you see that come. It'll probably incubate in Canada first, naturally. You know, you have Cineplex and others, 1,200 theaters. You know, you want to work in unison with them. So the story can be told, a story can be built. But then, hey, in America, there are 31 NHL cities. Soon it'll be 32 with the addition of Seattle. These cities, believe me, the NHL has always been all about fairness, equality in their league. They will be all over this film to get this into their markets because their audience is, importantly, almost 50% female. So you've got to give, you know, where you get and get where you give. So I'm very excited about this project, and I very much appreciate you and your experiences and your linkage that you have getting me together with people that first recognize Ventura County, because every call I'm on with you, it's always about, how are things in Ventura County, Doc? So, and then next, expanding that out. So I told him, too, I said, look, you don't need to do the movie in Quebec or do it in Buffalo or anything. Let's go do it in Ventura on the beach, and we'll just put in the after effects into it. So far they haven't agreed to that, but I'm pushing them for it.
Right. Maybe we'll work on our local tax break. I know Atlanta, it's really worked out for Atlanta to get that. But you sent me the one sheet. Right. So I'm a doctor. What do I know about this stuff? I'm learning. I always want to learn something new.
Sure.
So what, in terms of our aspiring movie makers, what goes into a one sheet?
That's a good point. You know, I can share that, and, you know, I'll do that with you, and we can share it with the audience. I think that's fantastic because it's simplicity. But, you know, you shouldn't be discouraged if your one sheet doesn't include your uncle, you know, who's a top movie person at, you know, whatever the film company is, okay? Some people get intimidated. They go, well, it's like a resume. When I was 14 and a half getting into broadcast, and I got in my first time on the radio, I was 15. I was doing VJ work at 14. And I went to the local place, and I beat my way into the doors and said, hey, you got to put me on the air. And I agreed to do every other job. It was a cable station in San Jose, Channel 2B. Gil Cable was the company, and it was KPAR-TV. And so I did. I got 2 days a week, 3 to 6, and the rest of the week, I had to go work the cameras, work the production room, work audio, whatever I do or did to get there. So I tell people, and then I wanted to go into radio. And those resumes that you make out, listen, all you have to do is put down. You're already working in the industry. I'm volunteering my time. I'm, you know, on the camera. I'm a VJ. I'm behind it. I know how to work the audio. I work the cameras. I'm learning to direct. I know how to do it. That's your resume. So if you're a movie maker, with today, and there's so much fantastic equipment out, there's so much fantastic technology, there's so much fantastic knowledge in making movies, and the best minds are usually those that are successful sharing with these new movie makers that are coming out, that those resumes are essentially the same thing. It's basically the look to it and knocking on the doors that you want to get into and maybe asking for help and so forth and sharing that with people so that they know you have that drive and that you're maybe just one pat on the back or an introduction away of making your magic happen. And I want to encourage everybody to think that way because it is possible, okay? Nothing is impossible in life. I'm convinced of that.
Well, that was the one sheet you sent me was just really the story, very simply.
Absolutely.
And
laid out.
And the
who's people, involved?
Who's involved?
Story laid out. You know, what the estimated costs are for production. Mm-hmm. Here are the contact people that are involved. Emails, okay, or, you know, Twitter handles and then phone numbers. Boom. And let me tell you, like you said, we've taken it to some high-end people. They got it right away on a one sheet. So it's very important. It just takes a little effort, and it takes people sharing. That's why I love what you do, because you know me, I'm open. I'll share everything with you.
Yeah, I just, my conversation with Jason Brennick was just a random email, and a couple months later, he's in the car, and what the heck, I'll talk to you, Dr. Landon. But it doesn't take long as we all remember
absolutely
what we do.
And where we came from and how we walk.
And how things come together.
Yep.
Well, Ventura, thank you so much, Chris Collins, for coming to Ventura, understanding what kind of a great place it is. So Ventura County, we really want to bring in industry and innovation from elsewhere. We want to bring in other people's experiences. We want to make Fresno want to come visit Ventura County for our wonderful beaches and weather, restaurants, and so forth. The abilities of the Innovation Center in terms of bringing the technology people in, but also we have an entertainment industry just over the hill. Chris is involved with a creative arts agency, and just that's where he'll be heading, and he'll remember Ventura County as part of his conversation there too. So Ventura County, I think it's time for you all to get behind the camera, put on a microphone. But most of all, Ventura Town, it's time for you to get moving.
I like the part of it that's invention.
You can fall into bad habits and a lack of discipline and fall back on your personality traits too much.
Like Betty Davis said, I have to keep proving to myself that I'm any good.
I have never experienced this much attention in terms of as simple as recognizability walking down the street. I didn't think it would ever happen to me. That would happen to Sylvester Stallone and John Travolta and Warren Beatty.
You pick a profession of which you're before the public in the way of through the transmission of film, and you figure you got to take a little bit of what comes of that.